is up for talking nonsense. I'm the American Jezebel.
And this is the Greasy Rapidian. I think I started yelling again in my cold face.
It's because you were whooping before we started.
Yeah, it was.
Yeehaw! Welcome to a Western episode of Talking Nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Wichita Falls, Texas.
Yes. No, they're in Anarene.
Oh, that's right. They're not in the big city.
They're not. They're in the small town. Wichita Falls is the big, big city.
Yeah. Ooh. All right. So. Maybe we should start before we get into episode 18.
I know. We're almost into the 20s on these episodes. It's 20. Crazy.
We're sitting here in headquarters, sitting orthogonal. Joe Rogan style. I'm wearing.
You're even wearing our Greasy Rapidian and American Jezebel Talking Nonsense merch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might have to post a photo of this.
I know. I probably did. I think I've posted one before, but yeah. Got to advertise that merch.
Yeah. So all you nonsensers, all you Debbies out there that are looking to get a shirt.
Didn't we have like a name for the readers? That was way back in like episode 3 though. I don't remember. I think we had a name.
We did.
I can't remember what we decided on.
You had some name. You came up with it. We'll have to go back and re-listen.
The Nonsensicals? I don't know.
Maybe one of our readers can remind us what we call you.
Yeah, if anybody remembers. Yeah. Yeah. Clearly the fan page has not been terribly active.
It has not.
It's hard to beat the listeners. I guess this is my podcast shout out for the week. The listeners of Who Weekly, who are called Hooligans. It's such a good fan name. So there's always hooligans calling in. This week's episode.
Yeah.
Is brought to you all by our newest future sponsor, Emily Pizza. I am fully converted to, our old friend the Tabby is back outside. Oh. We got an in studio cat listener.
Yeah, have a drive by cat
sighting.
Orange
Tabby. This episode is brought to us by Emily Pizza because I am fully converted to the Church of Emily Pizza. This is not a local sponsor, but if you are ever in the city of New York, you have so many opportunities. I mean, this is the greatest pizza in the greatest pizza city in the world. People are going to come at me for that. But
yeah, forget about Jim Carrey at this point.
This is hot take. Best pizza in the best pizza city. Yes, Chicago, I'm talking to you. I went to Emily Pizza recently. There's a couple of locations in the city of New York. And I went there with, the Savio sexualized, formerly known as the anarcho-syndicalist, who is known for his taste in the cuisines of New York.
Discriminating.
Yes, he is a very discriminating eater.
Gourmand.
He really is a gourmand. And he almost started crying when he bit into that pizza. That is how good that Emily pizza was.
Cloris Leachman style.
Almost
just crying.
Just throwing coffee pots at the wall, grounds all over the fridge, crying with how good this pizza was. Oh, you have to, and I have to say, first of all, make a reservation because you cannot get in unless it's at 5:30 or 9 p.m. I'm going to say 5:30 because they also have a special burger that they make there, and it was sold out by 7 the night that we went in. So you got to get in there and get that Emily pizza. And I would highly recommend the Emily, the namesake pizza of the place. I'm not even going to tell you what's on it. You just go in there and you order that, and you trust that the gourmand anarcho-syndicalist has led you right.
Okay.
So thank you to our newest
and
feature sponsor,
Emily Pizza. Take a ride-sharing app that treats women nicely.
Yes.
And because it may be the greatest pizza in the greatest pizza city, but getting there by the train, which may be one of the worst trains in one of the worst train cities.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. We are not sponsored by the MTA.
No.
We refuse to be sponsored by the MTA.
But we would be sponsored by Mrs. MTA or whatever the beauty contest is.
Oh, Miss Subway. Oh, yes, absolutely. We would sponsor Miss Subway. We would do
absolutely
a live show at Miss Subway.
We would absolutely.
Yes. Oh, people drinking Cuomo's tears as a talent. Yes, 100%. We are fully behind random pageants.
We are.
Miss Modernism.
Miss Modernism.
Miss Subway. Miss yeah. Subway. Love it all. Yeah, love it all. But totally not the MTA. It. We do not love the MTA.
Okay.
All right.
So thank you, Emily's Pizza, for sponsoring us.
I stand behind this take. Best pizza in the best pizza city.
Okay. Okay. And then that brings us to our agree to disagree, because it will not go away.
It will not. It is the story that never ends here.
Yeah, it really is. And so the comment was, she is so facially dexterous, like a likable Jim Carrey. That was the comment.
And this was like, again, in like episode 3 when we remember what our fans were called.
I think it was episode 5. I look back and I think it was like episode 5.
Yes, because our most listened to episode, the KB itself, is episode 3, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so.
So.
Whew. And, but, evidently, now we've found out that our guy, Jim Carrey, is in a Twitter feud with Mussolini's granddaughter. So we were informed of this. And I can only
say... Do you think she leads with that?
What's
like,
that?
Do you think that she leads with
Absolutely.
That? It seems like it. Because I bet there's all kinds of people out there that are like so-and-so's great-granddaughter who don't lead with that.
Right, but if you said, hi, my name is, you know, Benita Mussolini, people would say, oh, are you related to Benito Mussolini? You would say, yes, that's my grandfather.
Yeah.
You know, so if you had a name like that, you might lead with, yeah, I am related to them. You know, like if you said...
Well, I actually was just listening to NPR the other day, and they were interviewing the direct descendant of Robert E. Lee.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Who but that's is... kind of a common name.
Yes, what but his name is, his name is, I'm pretty sure his name is like Robert Lee or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I went to high school
but
with
how many
Robert
kids,
Lee.
Yeah, how many kids in the South are named Robert Lee? Let's
exactly.
talk about how many Jefferson Davises there are out there. Yeah, but if you went to high school with a
Robert
Lee. Well,
yeah, we went
Robert
to high school
Lee.
With a Robert Lee, yeah. Mm. But what if you were like one of the opioid families?
And you're a Sackler?
Yeah. And like you said, hi, I'm Jonathan Sackler III. People would go, huh, are you?
Do you think that many people would, though? Do you think that many people like associate their name? Because it's not as though like the like opioids, it's not as though like, hi, I'm Jonathan Opioid, you know?
Uh-huh.
Or like, I'm Jonathan whatever. What is their pharmacy? I can't remember what the company's called.
I don't know. I can't remember either. But, like, if you said, I am William Einstein, people would definitely say...
Definitely.
Yeah. And if you said, I'm John Edison, people would say,
Yeah.
Any of those names that are, like, associated, you know, people would ask.
Definitely.
And so if you say, I'm Mussolini, people are going to say, hey, are you related to...
Yeah.
So I'm sure
like
she
the,
leads with it.
Like the episode from the forever great canceled sitcom Happy Endings where she dates someone whose last name is Hitler.
Yeah.
And first tries to lean too far away from it and then leans too far into it. And either way, she loses. When she starts doodling Mrs. Hitler. So, yeah, there's a no-win scenario there.
Exactly.
So what is this feud? Is there anything else you wanted to say
no
about
idea.
It besides the fact that that's the news story now? Your boy just keeps coming up in the news.
He just will not go away.
He's doing paintings. He's doing snappy comebacks.
Yeah,
he's
anti-vaccine.
Feuding on Twitter.
He's anti-vaccine, too.
Yeah.
And so I have no idea.
But he is the...
So anyway,
the story that will not die.
I know. And so we just want to say to our dear friend, Mr. Carrey, don't feed the trolls.
Mm-mm.
Stop feeding the trolls.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we got to say. So we're not in a feud with you, Jim. You know, it was just an off-the-cuff reference. And so just referencing your facial dexterity was all it was doing. Because who else has that kind of facial dexterity?
Well, and making a commentary on his likability
well,
as well.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
There was a level of commentary on it as well.
There was that part of it as well. But it wasn't trolling. We were not trolling you.
No.
Because we've said some really trolly things.
Yes, we are not trolls.
And so we weren't trolling. So don't feed the trolls. Which leads me to my next thing. Joel Courtney, call us.
Joel Courtney, yeah.
Oh.
Do we have to do F the Prom? What are the other Joel Courtney vehicles that we could possibly...
We might have to do a Joel Courtney
trilogy.
Does
Joel Courtney have pictures in production? Because Noah Centineo is everywhere. Did he take over from Joel Courtney in like the Netflix boy world of, stars.
He must have.
Which
almost
the kissing booth was too polarizing, and so then they had to pull all of those Joel Courtney vehicles.
I don't know.
And they replaced him with Noah Centineo.
Huh.
I don't know.
But it leads me to my kind of maybe a new segment. We need some music for this.
Don't do the music. No, the music will be provided by Kevin MacLeod over at Incompetech.com.
Crushing it. The dude is crushing.
Your bloop doop doop is going to come nowhere near the level that Kevin MacLeod is at.
Nowhere near that, I don't know, 20,000 songs that he has on this thing. Just ridiculous. Anyway.
I have terrible news.
No.
I have terrible news.
Kissing Booth 2 is coming out. Okay, but we got to go back to my segment.
Sorry.
How did that person rise to be the star?
Okay.
So like in this movie, there's three young people.
Mm-hmm.
And of the three, I would have bet on Timothy
Bottoms becoming
the star.
Not Timothy Buttons.
Not Red Buttons.
Not old Tim Buttons.
Not Red Buttons, who was a star in and of himself. But I would have guessed Timothy Bottoms would have risen to be the star. He had the more nuanced performance, you know. He had good looks, like, you know, kind of like every man looks.
Yeah, great curls.
Some good acting chops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I was like, if I had to have guessed which one of the three, Cybill Shepherd, Jeff Bridges, or Tim Bottoms, I would have wagered Tim Bottoms. And if, like, you know, if we go to the show Roswell, one of my favorite teen...
We're going to mention a lot of really good teen shows today, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so Roswell, where there were a couple of characters that you would have said...
Well, so there's six, right?
Oh, there's six. Okay.
There's six. There's three aliens, two boys and one girl.
Uh-huh.
And then there's three humans, two girls and one boy.
Ooh.
And they just so happened to couple up.
Uh-huh.
Boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because it was nowadays they would have mixed it up a little bit more. Yes.
Yeah.
We're living in the Love, Simon era.
Right. We are. And so, but back in Roswell, you know, and so if I had to say which of those six, Katherine Heigl was not the one I would have chosen.
No, I was shocked when I found out Katherine Heigl was on when the original cast of.
Yes.
Would you have said it was going to be Sherry Appleby?
Yes.
Yeah. Who has gone on to do a lot of stuff?
She's gone on to do a lot, but not a star.
Yeah. And it's because she didn't have like a Grey's Anatomy style thing.
Oh, and then she went on to,
and then she was on in like all the terrible rom-coms of that really sad period of late aughts. Rom-coms.
We will not be doing a trilogy of those.
No, we're not doing The Ugly Truth.
No. And yeah, I can't remember the other one with her and Gerard.
That's The Ugly Truth.
Oh, I thought there was another one where he kidnaps her.
Oh, that's The Bounty Hunter with Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler. Yeah, also one I have not seen and will never see.
Okay, Gerard Butler.
Yeah, he's really the through line too.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, you would never have anticipated.
Never would have guessed.
Oh, it's going to be Katherine Heigl.
Right. And so Kissing
Booth.
I don't
know who the other four are.
If who do we think is going to rise to the top?
Mm-hmm.
Joel Courtney.
Yeah.
And he's not.
It's Joel King.
Yes. Shockingly.
Yeah. I feel like she was more established already, though.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
That could be a career killer.
I know.
Totally.
Could be, but no. Now she's doing Hulu drama series.
I'm just saying. So new segment.
Yeah.
You know who's gonna be the star?
Yeah.
And I would have predicted Timothy Bottoms crushing it.
Yeah, and even like, well, I don't know what is. I mean, we're gonna have to see long term with like the two All the Boys I've Loved. You know.
Yeah.
Will Noah Centineo be a flash in the pan Netflix star?
Yes.
And will Lana Condor have the longer career?
No.
You don't think she's going to have a longer career?
No.
Who will? It'll be somebody else.
The best friend.
It'll be Crazy Eyes. Yeah. Crazy Eyes' best friend.
Well, no, it could be the boy in the yellow tennis shoes in the background.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Extra.
No, but that's the extra from Edge of 17. Oh, well, actually, he's the extra in all the movies.
I think he's the extra.
I think
in
he's
all
a professional extra. Yeah. That's a good question. If we do any more new movies, we should predict who will be the real standout in the future that we're going to be like, what?
Anyway, Joel Courtney, call us.
Joel Courtney.
Okay,
please
so
call. We know you're just hanging out waiting to shoot Kissing Booth 2, call us and we will talk you out of that decision.
We will. We'll talk you down from that lash.
We'll talk you into sending us a script and letting us make 1,000 edits.
What were we going to have
Do
him
we
star
be involved
in?
Them?
A remake?
No. We're going to remake a...
Splendor in the Grass with
yes,
him?
Yes. It's going to be him, and then we hadn't decided on who we wanted the female star to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, episode 18. Thanks
episode
for tuning
18.
In. Episode 18 is the last picture show.
We're rounding out our old movie trilogy
we
right
are.
Now. Yes, with the last picture show, which was a little bit later than our previous ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which was Rebel Without a Cause was what year?
55, I believe.
Okay, so 55, then we had like 61. Yeah, I didn't write it down.
No,
61.
I think it was 61.
And now we're jumping a decade ahead to 71,
yes.
But it's set in 51, shot in black and white.
Yes.
So I had not, you had seen this movie.
I had seen this movie.
But it had been a while since you saw it.
It had been a long while.
This was like Rebel Without a Cause, many years since you saw it.
I was thinking, yeah, I was probably in my early 20s when I saw this.
Okay.
So it had been quite some time.
Okay. So I had not seen this, so I went ahead and coming back to our other person that we really want us, Amber Ruffin.
Some people were like, what? And I was like, oh, what?
The sunshine of our lives.
Amber,
the,
make
the moon
the alarm
and the stars.
Clock.
The one who hangs the sun in the sky.
Yeah.
Any
yeah.
other things like that. So we came back around to the American Jezebel says, what is this movie about? Right, so the last picture show. I actually have very little idea what this movie is about. What I do know, my predictions are, because, and I'm sure this will come up after we watch the movie and in the episode, everything I know about the last picture show comes from watching season 3 of Dawson's Creek. Again, I'm not recommending it, but in season 3 of Dawson's Creek, Dawson Leary watches it to passive aggressively, like, emotionally manipulate his friends into feeling terribly guilty about something. So I think the parallels are clear to that show, where I'm going to say, ooh, is it Jeff Bridges? Ooh, I don't remember who's in it. I think it's Jeff Bridges, isn't it? I don't know who the other two people are. But he's dating this girl, and then something happens, right? He has to, I think he's going to have to leave for some reason. He's got some opportunity, and he's got to leave their tiny little town. And so he asks his best friend to look out for his girl while he's gone, right? And then he leaves town, and while he's gone, the best friend and the girl realize that they are actually love each other. And so they fall in love while he's away, and he had asked his friend to watch over his girl, and then the friend watched over her too well. And when he comes back, it all blows up in their faces. So that's what I think happens in this movie.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Oh, my pop culture references to this movie really let me down.
Yeah.
Because that was not at all what happens.
Well, let me tell you.
But the parallels were still very real. So I still think it was highly inspired by this movie.
Let me tell you what this movie was about.
Tell me what this movie was
According
about.
According to the site that we rented from that we do not name. And we did rent from them. Anyway, that site says, The Last Picture Show. Brilliant study of life in a small Texas town during the 1950s. And how characters' lives intertwine. The story, based on Larry McMurtry's novel, follows the exploits of two high school football stars. Oscars went to Ben Johnson and Cloris Leachman for sensitive performances.
This person did not watch the movie.
Did not.
This is another intern over at the HQ of this place that we will not name. Who is like, characters interact and form relationships.
High school football
but
stars.
Those, yes.
They were getting pounded.
the whole first scene is just middle-aged men being disappointed in them for their football performances.
And then he was
later,
a lineman.
And
he was
later
not a star. He was
ragging
a lineman.
On them saying, oh man, I remember your days when nobody could play football. Now these guys, they actually know how to play.
And when He's did like, you graduate?
A year. Go. So they are not football stars. They did know the school song, though.
They did know the school song.
Did your high school have a song?
I'm sure it did. I don't remember it.
Not like a theme song that your class chose as the song that expresses your
really
your
celebrate
class.
Good times. Come on.
And that encapsulates your high school experience, correct?
It really does. That's my relationship with my high school classmates as well.
Oh yes.
They chose that song. I think I would have chosen Just Can't Stop It by the English Beat.
Which would have been very popular, I'm sure, amongst your classmates.
I think
too.
It got one vote, as did Titties and Beer by Frank Zappa, because who chose that one as our class song. And it got one vote as well.
But yeah, they are. They were in no way football stars in this movie.
They were not.
No. I thought the funniest parts of the whole movie was all of the men just coming up and shaking their heads and walking away. Didn't even say a word. Just so disappointed in their football performances. But yeah, I mean, that was the lead. That was not a terribly descriptive.
No.
Characters live in a town and have relationships, but sometimes they are fraught. Like that.
That's
basically what they're saying.
That's pretty much what they're saying.
Which is technically true, but doesn't tell you anything.
Doesn't tell you anything, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, why don't you tell me about this movie.
What I think this movie is about?
No, we've heard what you thought it was going to be about.
We thought
just
what
tell
it was
me
about.
Just like a brief plot overview. If you were the intern there at the big HQ, and they said, hey, write up I need you to pop out 30... you know, summaries of movies by the end of the day. We're going to load them up tomorrow.
Yeah. There's nothing to do in this small Texas town. And so everyone just kind of finds ways to pass the time, including the star of the movie, who's not Jeff Bridges, despite what everyone says, who has an affair with his basketball/football coach's wife, the town's rich girl who manipulates everybody to get to amuse herself, and the guy who runs the town, Sam the Lion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three things to do in town: go to the pool hall, go to the movie theater, and go to the diner, and drive around in your cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters do that.
Sam owns all three.
And Sam owns everything there is to do.
And movie.
Sam owns everything to do in the small town of Anarene, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is bored and just trying to find ways to feel alive in this windy, tiny town.
That's pretty much it. Okay, so let's cut to the chase then, because I have some thoughts about this movie.
Okay, I have info and you have insight.
All right. So, like Rebel Without a Cause, if you ask people about this movie, I think most people like my age would say, oh, I know that movie. Uh-huh. And then if you asked them what it was about, they could not tell you what it was about. And they would say, oh, it has Jeff Bridges and Cybill Shepherd, and she takes her clothes off on a diving board. Just the way everybody goes, oh, it has James Dean and Natalie Woods. And don't they have like a race, like a chicken race off a cliff? People can say, that's what everybody says about Rebel Without a Cause. That's what everybody says about The Last Picture Show. That's like this iconic scene from the movie.
And if you ask anybody of my generation, they would go, what?
Yeah. Nobody's watching this movie.
No. Nobody in my generation watched this movie. I've never heard anybody talk about this movie.
Yeah.
I will say, the other pop culture reference I wanted to throw in here when I was doing my research is that actually I was like, oh, have the teens watch this movie, because it is the title of an episode of the CW teen show Riverdale.
So the
title of one of the episodes is The Last Picture Show, and the plot is that their drive-in movie theater is closing down, and so they're having a last show, and there's all kinds of teen drama happening around it. And the movie that they show at the drive-in during the episode called The Last Picture Show is Rebel Without a Cause.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Last Picture Show.
I know. I thought that. I was like, oh, man, they watched The Last Picture Show in the episode. But no, they watched Rebel Without a Cause. But then neither of those things have any... Well, there's like, you know, teen gangs and things like that. But it has nothing to do with what happens in the plot of it. But it is. I think it's highly referenced. But yeah, then the plot of the episode has nothing to do with it, except that the movie theater is closing down.
And so I think this movie is highly referenced. Like, lots of people reference it. It's like, it's a cultural icon, but nobody watches it in the same way.
Like Rebel Without a Cause.
And yeah, Splendor in the Grass, right? Like, people will recognize the name and they'll go, oh, Warren Beatty, wasn't he in that? And people will recognize things about it, but nobody watches it and nobody remembers what it was about. Right. And so I think this is that same thing. And so I was like, we had this question about the other two, because this is really just Splendor in the Grass all over again.
Yeah, yes.
Kind of.
Except, people actually do have sex instead of going to mental institutions. Sex.
Well, Warren Beatty, I think, did with Dancing Girl.
I think he did, yeah.
And with the minx in Glass that he took to the waterfall. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. Because that was 10 years before, so we couldn't know. But then 10 years later, they can actually tell us. Peter Bogdanovich, the director, can actually tell us they had sex. Yeah.
And the mother, instead of saying, oh, never think about these things, instead is like, well, just sleep with him a couple times, and then you'll be like, oh, he's not that great.
Yeah.
Her prediction seemed to be fairly true.
Yeah, well, I think she was over him before that even.
She really was.
Yeah. But... So I was thinking about this movie, and so you mentioned earlier, so I'm going to just like have some thoughts rather than go scene by scene by scene by scene or whatever, right? So first thought is, you said, you know, the opening sequence is them going through town and everybody saying, you should learn to tackle. Why can't you tackle? What's wrong with tackling, right? And I was like, why is there just like this heavy-handed bludgeoning of this theme of tackling? And so then as I watched the rest of the movie, I was like, okay, this movie is about tackling social issues, because that's what we talked about with Splendor in the Grass, like these social mores that oppress people. And so then the other big theme in this movie is people taking their clothes off. And it just shows up again and again, and it's a big thing, you know, like when he's having the affair with the coach's wife. So this is Cloris Leachman. You know, it's like a big dramatic scene as they take their clothes off. And even like the kind of one of the opening scenes, he goes to the drive-in and he takes his girl up to make out point and she's kind of undressing in the car, you know. And so we just see people undress again and again and again. There's just a lot of undressing, including the, you know, iconic scene of her standing on the diving board undressing. And so I was like, what is this whole thing, right, about the undressing? And so it kind of is an undressing of social mores. So this is 71 after the sexual revolution, you know? And so what has this kind of freeing ourselves of the corset, of the, you know, the brassieres, of all these things done for us? And I think the commentary of the movie then is that it's just boredom, right? And so I think recently you were talking about how Game of Thrones is this an analogy or this metaphoric, you know, romp in terms of climate change. Winter is coming, right?
Or, yeah, some people read it that way.
Yeah, some people read it that way. Yeah, you were talking about it. And I was like, I wonder if this is kind of a metaphoric response to the sexual revolution, saying, okay, the sexual revolution was supposed to make us free, and here we now are in 71, and I can show naked full frontal nudity on the screen. I can have women topless a lot of the time in this movie. And it's just kind of boring, because the movie's just kind of boring and nobody reacts to anything. People die. Oh, Sam died. Yeah, it makes me sad when Sam dies. Billy gets hit by a truck. He was a stupid kid. What was he doing in the street? Nobody really reacts to anything.
Nothing.
And so even though we're now supposedly liberated and we just see all these people having sex with all these people, none of them seem to be free. And so my thought was, is that what the movie was about? Saying we were supposed to free ourselves by taking our clothes off, so to speak, but literally like letting our hair down, however you want to say it, you know, dropping out, tuning in, dropping out or whatever. I don't remember the saying, whatever. And so all these things we were supposedly going to do that were going to set us free. And it just made us bored. And so he sets it back in the 50s, so it's, you know, an allegory, you know, but it really is about that time, 71. And like every single sex scene, you would just go, oh my God, this is painful. Because yes. Nobody was enjoying it.
Nobody. Yeah. When I was doing some research, she asked me to do a little research on the background of this movie, and I read Roger Ebert's review of it. And he said, watching it again 30 years later, he was like, there's a lot of sex, but no eroticism. There's nothing erotic about anything that happens, even though it's a movie that's full of nudity and sex. Yeah, every scene, nobody is enjoying what's happening. So everybody is bored or unhappy with anything that's happening, even when they're like connecting with other people in this way.
And then so many examples of it that we have when she's supposedly going to have sex for the first time with Jeff Bridges, and then they don't. And then the other girls run in because everybody's outside waiting for them to have sex, which is, you know, this weird thing about the movie, right? Like, the people are waiting for her to undress at the pool. People are outside waiting for them to have sex. You know, so it is like sexual freedom of expression as a spectator sport, which I think is, again, another commentary on the late 60s, that a lot of this is just performance. And then when they come in and they say, how was it? She says, oh, it's just indescribable.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I feel like that the most, like a lot of things sort of talk about how this movie is sort of like nostalgic, and I didn't really feel like it was like a nostalgia piece in any way. It seemed like a bleak place to live, like a bleak time. Nobody seems to be very happy with anything that's happening in the town, and it really didn't seem like a nostalgia piece in any way. But the only time that it was, I think, the other sort of iconic scene that maybe like critics think of as the iconic scene from the movie, which is when he goes fishing, when I forget, Sonny goes fishing with Sam the Lion, and Sam the Lion gives him this whole speech about going out and riding his horses through the pond with this woman who, you know, and that's like the most tender scene of the whole thing, that like people were actually expressing love there. Because I was thinking about it too when you're talking about this, that like all the sex is like totally detached from any kind of like feeling, you know, like when she goes to the pool, the second party at that rich guy's house, and one of my least favorite moments, and he just like grabs her, he just like walks up and just like casually gropes her.
Trump did her.
And there's just like, it's just totally detached from like any feeling or any emotion. And the only scene where like there's any sort of expression of love, I think, because I'm trying to think if there's any other place where that happens, is Sam the Lion talking about this woman that we then find out is JC's mom later on. That they actually, there was feeling and passion and love in that. And I think that's the only place where it actually is in some way nostalgic, because it's attached to this, like, they were riding their horses through the river. Like, it's all like this sort of natural imagery, like them alone in nature, like detached from like everybody else here is driving around in their cars all the time. These like rickety beat up old cars, or like these really nice cars that are attached to like success, but they're on their horses and they're swimming without their bathing suits. And in that case, it's not this sort of exhibitionist nudity like you're talking about. It's like for each other only. Like, it's not meant for other people's eyes. So I think that's the only place where I feel like there is some like sense of nostalgia there, or a sense that there was something before that was more like love and pure than what's happening at any time on the screen.
But also Cloris Leachman's character.
Yeah, that's true.
Because she says, I never realized how drab this room was. What's your favorite color? And he says, I guess blue. I'll repaper it blue. And so she repapers the room, and then he never comes back.
And he never comes.
She's sitting on the bed. But then when he comes back, uh-huh, she gets really mad at him, and she gives him a little bit of truth.
Yeah.
And then he just reaches out and touches her hand, and she takes his hand.
Yeah.
And she holds it, and she pushes it against her face, and then she says,
never you mind, honey, never you mind.
And so there is a bit of tenderness.
Yeah. Or I was thinking too, when I was reading about it, they said the other moment of tenderness is when she's brushing his hair, when they're sitting, like, in the, you see the shot of the bed. It's a great shot because you see the shot of the bed and the bed is made. And then you, it pans
And the last
down.
Time in the bed was not very pleasant. She cried.
Oh, it was so rough. But you see the bed is made and then it pans down to them on the quilt sitting on the floor and they're both dressed and she's just like combing his hair and it's like, yeah, and she's just like kind of playing with his hair and they're just sitting there together and it is really tender there too and there's no nudity, there's no sex involved in that. It's like this actual moment of kind of playfulness and tenderness.
And he even says, what would your husband do if he caught us? And she said, he would shoot us. He's been wanting to use his deer rifle.
And they actually,
and then he,
like,
just eats his
they
Oreo.
Actually, like, giggle. I know, he's like eating cookies and she's playing with his hair while wearing his like big work shirt. Uh-huh. It's really nice.
Yep.
Yeah, that actually was, I forgot about that little scene. Yeah, because there are so many where then it's just like, whoop, we're done with that scene. Time to move on to the next thing.
And so I did think it was kind of a, you know, and maybe I could relate to it more than I could relate to Splendor in the Grass, but I could kind of relate to it. Like, okay, so there was this huge movement that supposedly was going to set us free and liberate us, and it really didn't. You know, and all the, you know, like even Sybil Shepherd, who, you know, was a vixen, you know, she thought that, you know, like even when she gets pussy grabbed, he says, oh, you're a virgin. And she said, but I'd like not to be. And he's like, well, come and see me when you're not. And so she just wants to not be that. You know, so back to our liminal space, you know, how many of them are trying to become something else, right? I mean, everybody in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just can't.
Yeah.
That town is oppressive.
Whew.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think even at one point, the woman at the cafe, after he gets hurt, brings him a hamburger. And then she says, well, you know, JC's no good. The Sybil Shepherd. Mm-hmm. You know, her grandmother was no good.
Yeah.
And she said, my husband could have had the well that her daddy had. And he says, do you wish that you'd have made it? And I can't remember what she says, but she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. She's like, well, then I just have a bunch of money, but nothing would be different.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's,
and it's true for that family.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing's different for them because they've got money.
No.
No.
And so it is this kind of, all of them are trying to be something different. They just can't. They just can't get there. You know, even when he goes back to Cloris Leachman at the end, he's trying, but he can't. Like, he can't even say, I'm sorry for how I treated you.
Yeah.
He just can't.
Yeah.
None of them. You know, Jeff Bridges, when he comes back and busted him up, almost lost his eye.
Oof, yeah.
And he doesn't say, I'm sorry I busted you up.
He's yeah.
Like, he's like, well, I still think I got a chance with JC.
Well, borrow my car. I'll be back in a couple years if I don't get shot.
Yep.
Bye.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many scenes like that where they're just trying to be something else and they just can't get there.
Yeah. Does anybody? I'm just trying to think, everybody's kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that oppressive.
Yeah. Because it's like, even, you know, Sonny graduates from high school and then he inherits the pool hall, which is like this, like, little shack basically with some pool tables in it. You know, there's nothing in there. The wind is whistling through the door every minute, and, you know, he inherits this like shack pool hall, and then it seems like that's just what he's gonna do, and then, you know, deliver some propane for his dad. And he just sort of, then he's just there, you know, he graduated high school and then he just transitions right into holding the flags instead because he's not in high school anymore. Yeah. You know, and they're already like, when did you graduate? And it's only been last year, but he's already like aged into, this is what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Oof.
Yeah. And so then back to, you know, if this is an allegory of, this is us as a society moving, we can't.
Mm-hmm.
We just, social mores are too heavy.
Hmm.
You know, and so again, back to America's nations, you know, the founding ideologies of where you come from are so powerful that even after millions of people have come and tried to change it, they're still the ideologies. Why are so many kids still named Robert Lee?
Mm-hmm.
You think that would go away, but 150 years later, people are still naming their kid Robert Lee and Jefferson Davis.
Yeah.
How is that possible? And it's just so ingrained and so oppressive that you cannot get away from it.
Your grandmother was no good. You're no good.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yep. Hmm. Just not going to get away from it. You're going to be that. And that's that town, right?
Yeah. And yeah, even like the town itself is just like flat, and like the atmosphere of it is oppressive. Like everybody's just trying to like escape literally like the air.
Yeah.
Every time.
Nobody's hanging out outside.
No. No one's ever growing outside.
Even Leslie Manson, his little
literally
speech.
Literally, they had the tumbleweed go by.
In his little speech, though, he was like, there were no mesquite trees here and no prickly pears.
There's nothing there.
There was nothing there. And he kind of misses when there was nothing and now there's just scrub.
Yeah.
And it's kind of no good now because there's scrub. Right?
Yeah.
And so it's that oppressive that you can't get out of it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's a kind of a bleak, I mean, it was a bleak town and a bleak group of or people who were facing just total bleakness forever. And then if we draw that line to it being a vision of our society, pretty bleak too.
Yeah.
That we never escape anything that that has already been, we never escape what we are born into.
Yeah, I know this whole
everybody
SAT college entrance scandal. Like, how is this any different? Than who got into college in 1780. It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
We can't get away from it.
No.
And everything we do to try to change it, you know, for whatever reason, just becomes another way for it to manifest again. You know, and maybe the only hope is, you know, because I just think about the new Jim Crow. You know, and it's just so depressing to think, okay, we'll never get away from that. It's just really depressing.
It's just going to find new ways to do the same things.
Yeah, but I think what Michelle Alexander says in there, that each time the level of control is less.
Huh.
You know, so in chattel slavery, it was complete control.
Yeah.
And then in Jim Crow, it was almost complete control.
It's like social control.
Yeah, and now in, you know, mass incarceration, it's less control, but it's still a lot of control, but it's way less than chattel slavery. And so it just lessens and lessens each time it appears. But, you know, and so, I mean, that's the good news. The bad news is it will reincarnate, you know, many times again until it dissipates. It just takes forever, generations and generations. And I just go, oh, that's hard to deal with. But that's the last picture show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's bleak.
Yeah, that you want sexual revolution,
and
you want
you
sexual
get it,
freedom.
And then it doesn't change things.
It doesn't change a thing.
Yeah.
You know, some guy that's old enough to be your father's having his way with you on the pool table, drives you home and says, get out of my car.
Oh.
You know, that's what sexual liberation brings you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Exactly.
Yeah.
Not what you expected.
Mm-mm.
Oh.
No, it's rough.
It is rough. All right. Pop in a Dawson Creek reference. Cheer us up.
This was not... This. Okay, this actually... Well, to lighten the mood. Again, because I my only understanding of this movie was through Dawson's Creek, which is that it's this love triangle between these three people. And it actually... Again, I've already said it before. Dawson is a villain of his own show. And this makes him more of a villain to me. If he thinks that, like, his friend, that baby Katie Holmes, is the JC of his, is like JC, that is so rude. That is so rude to baby Katie Holmes and that show, because JC was, yeah, she had very little that was very redeeming about her.
It'd be hard pressed to find.
Yeah.
She was 100% manipulative.
Yeah. She's a rough character.
She was.
her mom ultimately was much more compelling than she was.
Yeah.
I love her mom driving up with her sunglasses and then flipping the dude off and driving away. That was awesome. There was so much personality there. And JC was just like, oh, here's this rich guy. Oh, I need to sleep with this other guy in order to sleep with this rich guy who pussy grabbed me. And now, oops, he's married. So I guess I'll just, for a lark, marry this other guy and then set it all up so that, like, nothing, so I can just tease him for like a day because I'm bored. Yeah. Yeah. So it makes me hate
Dawson.
After
he had his eye knocked out.
Yeah. For yeah. this whole thing. Yeah. So it makes me hate Dawson even more because that is so rude. So rude. He could have come up with way better, like Titanic would have honestly been a better love triangle situation. And that one is also not a good love triangle. So it's just like, makes me hate Dawson even more.
Okay, well, tell me some facts about this
movie. So you had asked me about this movie before. Well, after we watched it, you had asked if this movie had been rated X.
Well, because a couple recollections I had, because I thought, you know, in my decrepit recollections that the director, Peter Bogdanovich, was having an affair with Sybil Shepherd. Is what I thought was happening in this movie, so that she is typecast, that she is a minx in real life as well as in the movie. And I thought that was true. And I thought the other thing that was, because there was so much full frontal nudity, that this had gotten like an X rating and couldn't be showed in theaters. And it was like a big deal because it won Oscars for different actors. And then I think a couple years later, maybe The Last Tango in Paris won Best Picture, and I think it was X-rated. Marlon Brando, and I can't remember the woman's name, who was completely traumatized by the movie. I can't remember her name.
It was just the story of the 70s.
Yeah, it's a story of a lot of decades, as we know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so those are the things that I remembered kind of about it, and I don't know if they're actually true.
So I did a little research on Wikipedia, Roger Ebert's review, and and they have an oral history of the making of this movie from Entertainment Weekly. So if you want to read more about it, Entertainment Weekly did a whole oral history and talked to Sybil Shepherd, Jeff Bridges, a little bit to Tim Bottoms, love that name, to Peter Bogdanovich, a bunch of other people as well. So
there were tons of people in this.
Well, did you know that they made a sequel to it? There is a sequel to The Last Picture Show
I'm remembering this now.
Texasville.
Yeah, I am.
It looks terrible.
I am remembering this now.
And they basically said that the sequel is fine. They got basically everybody back for it too, except for Sam the Lion because he died in the previous movie.
What about Randy Quaid?
I don't know if Randy Quaid was in it. Oh, fun! We're bringing it back up to the nonsense because fun fact: Billy, the character, we didn't really talk about Billy at all. He gets hit by the truck. It's
Timothy
very
Bottoms,
sad.
The younger brother.
Timothy Bottoms' younger brother, who was just hanging out on set because Tim Bottoms was there, and then Peter Bogdanovich drove by and he said he looked like what I thought Billy should look like, and I wasn't really happy with the kid we'd cast. And then later on in the oral history, they talk about how they think the kid who was cast as Billy originally, Randy's brother Dennis. So Dennis Quaid got fired from playing Billy because Peter Bogdanovich randomly liked Timothy Bottoms' brother better. So they were brothers in those scenes where he's turning his hat backwards.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
So that's a fun fact. But yeah, Texasville looks rough. It looks like a Lifetime movie or like it's kind of like a Nicholas Sparks sort of cover. It's Jeff Bridges and Sybil Shepherd. Like they make fun of Nicholas Sparks, and all of those covers are white people almost kissing. And it's one of those covers. It's Jeff Bridges and Sybil Shepherd, white people almost kissing. And it's just about she comes back to town after like 30 years and yada, yada. But Annie Potts is in it.
Oh.
Yeah, she's Mrs. Jeff Bridges in the movie.
Well, it's almost worth watching just
yeah,
Annie
just
Potts.
For the Annie Potts of it all.
Yeah. She should call us.
She should.
Yeah.
Yes.
Annie Potts, yeah, you're up on the...
But to answer a couple of your questions or to clarify some of your recollections of it,
Thank you. The
film was actually, as far as I know, not rated X, but it was banned... In a drive-in theater in Phoenix, Arizona, because it violated an obscenity statute. So, but they did manage to overturn it. So, as far as I can tell, it actually was not rated X, but it was seen as somewhat obscene. Also, the reason he shot it in black and white was because Orson Welles was staying at his house and said, oh, you should shoot it in black and white. But Orson Welles was not, and he read the script and he did not like it because he said it was too filthy. So.
Thank you, Orson.
Yes. And so the movie that they show at the end of the film, which is the last picture show, is The Red River, John Wayne's The Red River, which is takes place in Abilene, Kansas. Oh, no, yes, it's Howard Hawks of the Red River, yes. And so the reason that the town Anarene, Texas, is a play on Abilene, Texas, Kansas.
I see.
But it was actually shot in the guy who wrote the book, Larry McMurtry's hometown of Archer City, Texas. So that's his actual hometown. It looks like there is nothing there. He said there's like 1,700 people that live in the town.
That's way more than I would have guessed.
I anticipated there was like 700.
I would have guessed 500.
Half as many people there.
Yeah.
So, and then your other question. So, yes, Sybil Shepherd says that she got cast because she was a model of the year. And Peter Bogdanovich saw her on the cover of a magazine and said that girl looks like what JC should look like. And so he had a meeting with her and he decided that he really wanted to cast her. Right. And she said that she had not had a single acting lesson going into this movie. So she said she was a lot like JC. She says, I didn't think I was a lot like JC, but I was a lot like JC, just in the sense of having men fall in love with me and then breaking their hearts. I did a lot of that. So she did date both Jeff Bridges during the filming of this movie. Then he went away for a week to shoot something else. And when he came back, she was dating Peter Bogdanovich. So he took off for a week and came back. And just like, I don't know if he then attacked him with a beer bottle and tried to knock out his eye. But yeah, so she did date Jeff Bridges during the filming and then got together with Peter Bogdanovich. It's kind of a rough story because Peter Bogdanovich was at the time married and she had just had a baby and she was kind of his co-collaborator and the marriage did not last. So people who are talking about in the oral history are like, that was a little bit rough because she was helping work on the movie and everybody really liked her as well. Mm. So it's a little bit rough.
She should have taken up with Timothy Bottoms.
And then Sybil Shepherd later, they thought that it was during the filming of the movie, later on had an affair with Elvis as well.
Ah.
Yeah. Post this movie.
Huh. She was JC.
She was JC. She really was.
She really was.
So, yeah. And Cloris Leachman did that last scene in one take, no rehearsal.
Huh.
Yeah.
Throwing the coffee,
all of it.
Wow.
One take.
She got after
it. So, yeah. My biggest takeaway from the oral history was Peter Bogdanovich is kind of disappointed he didn't win Best Picture for it. He thinks it was political that he didn't win. That what was the movie that won that year? It was The French Connection. Won Best Picture over his movie. And it's because he said he thought his movie was the best one of the year.
Well, I'm sure he did.
Yes. But he thinks that's what lost him. He should have said another movie and then he would have won the Oscar.
Oh.
So, yes. So there was all kinds of shenanigans happening during the filming of the movie. And it was banned in one drive-in theater in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. All right.
Seems like a lot of people really enjoyed working on the movie. So.
And there was tons of people in it, as
there's
we said.
Tons of people in it. Yeah. I guess going back, I really like this game now that we need to play in the future of which one of these people will become the biggest star. Because Jeff Bridges, like, he got some real connections, though. You know? Like, born into, like, a Hollywood family, you know?
Yeah.
If you saw, you know, Drew Barrymore in E.T., you would have been like, oh, well, it's going to be Drew Barrymore because she's Drew Barrymore, which, love Drew Barrymore.
No, I love Drew Barrymore as well. First Dates. Her production of a dating show. Anyway. And she's just a cutie pie.
Yeah.
Just stinking cute.
So cute.
Yeah.
And yeah, just seems like a lovely person too.
Really does.
A celebrity, again, I'd really want to be friends with. She also has a new line of like home goods through Walmart that are super fun. It looks like your like boho aunt's house in Miami or something, and it's
okay.
Super fun.
You know how I feel about Chrissy Teigen stuff.
Yes.
So Drew, don't do it. Don't become
it. It's great.
Gwyneth Paltrow, Chrissy Teigen.
No.
Jessica
she does have
Beals.
A makeup line, like a natural makeup line too. So.
I'm not interested in that. Stop. She's slowly losing ground.
Oh, no, she's the best.
No, stop.
All right, so that's your information about The Last Picture Show.
Okay, well, let's talk about what we watched before. Rate this movie.
Yeah, did you have a favorite outfit of the movie?
I did have a favorite outfit.
It's a bleak movie, so did you have a favorite outfit?
My favorite outfit was Cloris Leachman getting ready to go to the clinic.
Oh, that was a good outfit.
Just ridiculous.
It's kind of like square shoulder jacket,
wool tailored jacket with a small pillbox hat. Oh my God, you looked great.
She did look great.
For going to the clinic.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to the abortion clinic.
That's what I thought too.
I think she did.
Okay.
I think that's what happened.
But then why did she go back? She was like,
she went for a follow-up.
Okay. Or was it a come take me to the clinic again, in quotes?
No, I think she went for a follow-up.
Okay. That's what I thought as well. Yeah. I thought that's why she was going.
I think it is where she went. But she dressed nice
she
for it.
She looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did look great. And across the board, Jeff Bridges looked great in the movie. His outfits, he had some great patterned shirts going on. His little combed hair, early 50s situation.
Yeah, kind of that
looked great.
Like flocked linen jacket when he went to the dance.
With those like flowy open shirts with patterns.
Yeah.
He was ahead of the fashion curve. Where was he getting those clothes in that town? I think all they sold were like sheepskin jackets and like jumpsuits.
Denim.
Yeah, it was a denim town.
It
so
was a denim
he must have
town.
Been driving to Wichita Falls thrift stores in
Mexico.
1951.
He got him in Mexico.
He probably did get him in Mexico. Yeah, definitely. He's driving across the border to go shopping.
Okay, do you have a favorite line?
I was looking back. I don't know that I do. I can't remember what. I do have a favorite line. It is from JC.
Okay.
It's so rude because she was a very rude person. But when she picks up the phone after they've actually finally consummated their physical relationship and he's all excited, and then she's like, "What's on your feeble mind, Dwayne?"
She was ruthless.
After she got exactly what she wanted from him and then just threw him to the curb. "What's on your feeble mind, Dwayne?"
Oh, she. Yeah, I think after sex, she was like, "Well, it wasn't that good, but I guess that's what I can expect, knowing who your parents are." And she just went off. It was like
so
four in a
rude.
Row. She
just like boom,
set
boom,
him
aflame. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your favorite line?
My favorite line was when they're at the dance and he realizes she's going with Lionel to the naked swim party.
Uh-huh.
He goes over and he's going to fight Lionel. He's like, "Come on, don't you grab me. No, we're going to do something about it right now." And then the sheriff comes out and says, "Hey, you boys, this is a dance. You just break it up." And they're just kind of standing there, and then he looks at Lionel and he says, "Run along, Wichita. I can't stand here all night protecting your shoe shine."
Well, there were some good lines in this movie.
That was my favorite. I'm going to use that line.
Run along.
I can't stand here all night protecting your shoe shine.
Well, I'm going to use "What's on your feeble mind, Dwayne?"
Okay, should we watch before and then rate this movie?
Yeah, although did you have a star by far?
I do have a star by far, but I wanted you to go first because I think you might pick somebody and then I'll pick the other person.
Because my star by far is Genevieve, the diner waitress.
That's who I thought you would pick. That's why I wanted you to go first.
I loved her.
Yeah, Eileen Brennan. Oh my God.
Oh, also in the oral history, very rude to her. He said he picked her, or maybe this is a Wikipedia page. Peter Bogdanovich picked her because she had the kind of sad, plain face of a diner waitress.
Yeah, nicely done, Peter.
Yeah, so I loved her sad, plain face, and I thought she was great, and she took care of everybody. She gave the best advice.
Yep.
She was the most grounded of everybody.
Yep.
I think she had like
She
spoke truth, you know? She was doing her job.
Yep.
She recognized that like even if she wasn't bitter about not getting that well that her husband could have had, so she has to work. And even when he gets his job back, she's still going to work in the diner. He'd make those great burgers.
And
smoke
pay
a
off
cigarette.
Their
medical
hospital
bills.
Yeah.
I loved her.
Yep. I loved her too.
She was the heart of the town.
She was making everybody, giving everybody a chance to get out.
She was.
To make that liminal leap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I liked her a lot too. So that was yours. And so that would have been mine as well. And that's why I wanted you to go first. But then my second one was the theater owner.
Oh, yeah.
She's just trying to help those kids. And there was a lot of the older people that were trying to help the kids. And it really was. I mean, so like you say, well, there wasn't much tenderness. But even when Sam is like, "I don't want you boys coming around here anymore after they take Billy to the prostitute," And they're shocked, but he's not, you know, he's just like, you crossed a line. And so there's a lot of them that are that way. Even with the crazy scene of the kidnapping, like they show up and, you know, they're like, he's the preacher's kid. And it was just a crazy scene, but they're trying to help him because they know that he gets picked on, et cetera, and that he's just that kid. And so they hold him accountable for what he did, but they don't, you know, beat him or beat him down. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the adults were kind of that way, kind of resigned to how things were and then trying to help the kids, but not coddling them and not beating them down.
Yeah. What'd you watch before?
Well, I watched Maniac, the Netflix series with Emma Stone and Jonah Hill. I have no idea what that was about. So we've had trouble with Splendor in the Grass and Rebel Without a Cause having time problems and not making sense. And so Maniac just makes no sense. It's like Inception, you know, you just put everything in a dream and then you can do whatever you want whenever you want. And I still have no idea what it was about. And so it was nice to see a simple movie that kind of followed a chronological normal pathway and was just there. I'm going to rate the movie. I gave this movie 3,586 KB.
Hmm.
I had remembered this from when I was young, and I did not remember it well. Like, I did not remember going, I like that movie. I remember it being somewhat tedious. And so maybe this is the inverse of Rebel Without a Cause. That you watch this when you're older and you go, oh, yeah, you know, I thought all those things were going to kind of liberate me. And they didn't. They just bored me. And so I had, like, it was somewhat nostalgic in that sense for me. It wasn't nostalgic in, like, I wanted to be in the 50s or I wanted to be back in the 70s. But it was nostalgic in the sense of, oh, I can kind of remember what it was like to think that something was going to change me and make me better if I only did this one thing. And then it didn't. And so I had a greater appreciation for the movie and then what it was trying to say about society as a whole. That I don't think I had when I was younger.
Hmm.
And so I enjoyed the movie, as it turns out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, it definitely is, I found it to be the most watchable of this entire trilogy. what I watched before was the final season of Jane the Virgin is Back. Which is kind of the opposite of this movie because everything is in hypersaturated color and everything that happens is like hypersaturated because it's a telenovela. And everything is also, I would say, very, very hopeful too about like things and in a way that kind of the inverse of how kind of bleak this was, that like there are things that are wrong that we should be upset about and terrible things happen to, but with it, there's a lot of love and tenderness between all of the characters on that show. So I was also got very sleepy at the end of this movie. So I think this might be like this might be the inverse of Rebel Without a Cause, because I didn't not like this movie, but I didn't really connect with it very much either. So I gave this movie, where did I put my rating? 336 KBs. So I rate it higher than anything in this trilogy for sure. But I wouldn't say that I really, really connected to this movie. I didn't really dislike it, but I didn't love it. I think there's a lot of things that I could appreciate about it from a filmmaking perspective and from a story perspective as well. But I think it'd be a long time before I came back and revisited this movie. And I don't feel like I connected to some of those themes as deeply as you did for it. So there you go.
Yeah, this might be our
second greatest disagreement. All right, well, we also want to plug again a couple episodes down the line. We've got a new trilogy coming up, and then after this new trilogy, we're going to do our listener suggestion episode. So again, you can reach out to us and let us know what you think. We've heard lots of opinions, and we want you to put it in writing, send it to us either a message on Instagram at American Jezebel, or you can tweet at us at American_Jezebel, or you can email us at AmericanJezebel.GreasyRapidian@gmail.com. Let us know what you think we should watch for our listener suggestion episode. We get lots of people just telling us, oh, I got a movie for your podcast. Send it in writing and we will consider it.
Yep, drive-by shoutings. We get them all the time.
We will not take a drive-by this time. It needs to be written down.
Yep.
So let us know what you think we need to watch on the podcast.
And next week, our next episode.
We're transitioning to our new trilogy. Do we even want to tell them what the trilogy is?
No, we never tell them what the trilogy is.
We're not going to tell you. But the film we're going to be watching, which is available to stream and rent in a number of places, is Still Mine. Still Mine is the movie. So join us in a couple of weeks for Still Mine.
Okay, and Tony Schiacalone, thank you for sponsoring us.
Always, Tony, we love you so much.
We do love you, Tony.
We love so many people.
We do.
Not Mussolini's granddaughter, but a lot of other people.
Yeah. We're not even mentioning her. We're not feeding the troll.
No. Thanks for talking nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.